The Golden Age of Radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the Golden Age of Radio, Ann Gillis stars as Judy Foster on A Date with Judy. Dr. Tim Detective is on the case of a poisoner at large, and comedy with the Lou Holtz Laugh Club. Stay tuned for the Golden Age of Radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, Dr. Tim Detective is on the case of a poisoner at large and comedy with the Lou Holtz Laugh Club. Right now, Ann Gillis stars as Judy Foster on A Date with Judy as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Night and day, at home or away, always carry Tums. T-U-M-S. Tums, famous quick relief for acid indigestion, presents A Date with Judy. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a very special treat for you this evening. Here to keep his date with Judy is your favorite singing star, Frank Sinatra. And now to keep our date with Judy, that lovable teenage girl who is close to all our hearts. Your date with her each Tuesday at this same time is arranged by the makers of Tums, famous quick relief for acid indigestion. T-U-M-S, Tums for the tummy. As we look into the Foster living room, we find Judy's parents and her kid brother Randolph. And Judy wants to know...
How do I look, Mother? Do you like the way I did my hair? How do I look, Father?
Fine.
Lovely, Judy.
Aren't you going to ask me?
All right. How do I look, Randolph?
Fine.
It took me 2 whole hours to get dressed.
2 hours? Good heavens. Did you go to all that trouble just for Oogie Pringle?
Oh, no. You see, Oogie and I are going to see a Frank Sinatra movie, and I want to look my best in his presence. Even if it is his screen presence, it's the least tribute I can pay to a great artist like Frank Sinatra.
Who's Frank Sinatra?
You're even alive.
Now, wait a minute, Judy.
Well, I don't see how anybody could be alive and not know who Frank Sinatra is. Why, everybody knows him.
I don't.
Why, Father, I can't believe you don't know him. Well, he's the man who, after he starts to sing, everybody swoons.
The father swoons before he starts to sing.
He's a crooner, Melvin.
A swooner crooner.
Oh, him, yeah. Yeah, it seems to me that I've, seems to me I've heard you mention him before, Judy.
It seems. Yipes, he hasn't mentioned anything else around here since 1941.
Is he the fellow who makes the girls squeal?
That's the guy. Father's identified him.
Well, I think it's all pretty silly.
Oh, now, Melvin, I distinctly remember when you were Judy's age, you used to squeal every time Theda Barra came on the screen.
I did not. I may have given a soft little moan now and then, but I didn't squeal.
Oh, Melvin.
After all, what has this guy got that nobody else has got?
Well, the way I figure it, he has little electric shockers installed under all the seats of the theaters he plays in. And then every time he hits a high note, he pushes a little button.
Randolph, that's practically sacrilege. I just want you to know that every swoon he gets is genuine, absolutely genuine.
You know, I used to be a pretty good swooner crooner myself. Yes, sir. I'm the sheik of Araby. Your love belongs to you and me.
Oh, Father, That hasn't even the slightest resemblance to Frank Sinatra.
It's not even a reasonable facsimile.
At night, when you're asleep, into your tent, I'll creep.
Hiya, Judy. Hiya, Mrs. Foster. Hi, Randolph.
Hello, Ogie. Come on in.
Hiya, Mr. Foster.
Gosh, Ogie, do you have to shake my hand like that? Nearly broke it in two. Boy, what a grip you've got.
Sorry, Mr. Foster. I guess I don't know my own strength.
After this, let's bow to each other instead of shaking hands.
Okay. Hey, Judy, I thought instead of going to see the Sinatra picture that we'd go see... Hey, boy, do you look snazzy.
Thank you, Oogie. But if you have any ideas about going anyplace else, forget them.
Julie, it kind of embarrasses me every time. Well, it just isn't good for my health to see his pictures. Every time somebody squeals, well, it gives me goosebumps.
Help me with my coat, Oogie. The picture starts at 8:20.
All I can say is it's mighty tough for a fellow to live in the same world with Frank Sinatra.
You have my sympathy, Oogie.
Yeah, all of us men are in the same boat, Oogie. We're all living in the same world with Frank Sinatra. Well, we'll just have to band together and face it as best we can.
Oh, yeah, but... Well, it's mighty sad to think a whole generation is doomed like that.
I can hardly wait, Oogie.
Judy, are you sure you wouldn't rather go to the Bijou? There's a triple horror bill there.
No, Oogie.
Well, there's a hockey game at the auditorium.
No, Oogie.
How about going over to the fire engine house and waiting for a 3-alarm fire? Well, I guess the answer's no.
Oogie, just a minute. Just what is your objection to Frankie?
Well, for one thing, every time you go see one of his pictures, you don't look at me for 2 weeks afterwards. In fact, you don't look at anything. You just kind of walk around in a daze.
Oogie, you're really sort of jealous, aren't you?
Jealous of that little peewee?
Now, Oogie, I'm going to be very patient with you and explain how a girl feels.
Oh, you are?
Yes. Provided you will refrain from making petty remarks about a man who is practically on a pedestal, as far as the worldly, mundane things are concerned in this world.
Yeah, but I can croon too, Judy.
It hasn't anything to do with mere crooning. It's something that, when he sings, comes over you.
Not only that, but I'm the orchestra leader of Oogie Pringle and his high school hot licks.
You don't understand, Oogie. You see... He represents everything that a girl wants out of romance.
Hmm.
Her ideals of what perfect love is like. The way she feels about him is the way she wants to feel about... Well, the man she'll be in love with someday. Only she knows that nothing will ever be as good as how Frankie makes her feel love could be as good as. Is that clear, Oogie?
No, but go ahead.
Well... He is a girl's dream of the utter acme of ideal love. And when he stands before you there on the screen, you see something absolutely beautiful.
Thin Bing Crosby.
All right, then. If you just want to ignore real artistic exquisiteness...
Well, what do you want to do, marry the guy?
Of course not, Oogie. I know he's, well, unattainable and remote and... Unattainable and everything.
Well, then why don't you try and attain something that isn't so unobtainable? Like me.
Oogie, really? You're just a young boy who happens to be a good friend of mine. But as far as having any effect on people the way Frankie affects people...
I wouldn't want to affect people like that. Afraid somebody was going to do a flip-flop if I so much as said hello to somebody. I wonder how Sinatra stands it.
I'm sure he's above noticing that sort of thing. All he really thinks about are the words he's singing in his songs... About love. Abstract love, of course. That's what he thinks about.
Well, I'd sure hate to be the guy who went around thinking of love all the time. Doesn't he ever think about eating?
Oh, Oogie.
Look, Judy, the point I'm trying to make is... Well, I'm gaga about you. I even wrote a song about you. Just for you.
Yes, Suki, I've heard you sing it. It's very nice.
Well, when I sing it, I think about you. And all Sinatra thinks about is abstract love. So why couldn't you be gaga about somebody who's right here instead of in a movie?
It wouldn't be the same, Oogie. It wouldn't be the same.
You'd rather see Sinatra kiss some movie actress?
I guess it amounts to that. It's so beautiful. Well, here we are at the movies. Buy the ticket, Suki.
All right. But I wish I understood women. Oh, my foot's asleep. Quiet, Oogie.
It's twilight, and here we stand above the city, looking out into the darkness. Come into my arms, darling. And let me hold you for a moment before we light the lamp.
Isn't that wonderful, Oogie? Isn't that wonderful?
Just adorable.
We're alone, we two. All alone.
Oh, Frankie.
He doesn't mean you, Judy. He means that lady up there on the street. Quiet, Oogie.
Holding you close, so close, is like holding a beautiful flower. One that I can only keep for a little while. Before you fade away.
I wish I could fade away.
Your loveliness creates little melodies in my heart. Little melodies that cry out for expression.
Oh, Oogie's gonna sing now.
If you squeal, Judy, I'll be so mad I'll swoon.
Night and day. Whether near to me or far, it's no matter, darling, where you are, I think of you. Day and why is it so? That this longing for you follows wherever I go. In the roaring traffic's boom, in the silence of my lonely room, I think of you. Day and night, night and day, under the hide of me, there's an all such a hungry its torment won't be through till you let me spend my life making love to you day and night, night and day.
Americans are often in too big a hurry to get nowhere fast. We rush for trains, bolt our food, or eat on the run. Result? Very often acid indigestion. Well, when this happens to you, remember the answer is Tums. For Tums are just about the fastest relief there is for heartburn, upset acid stomach, and other signs of acid indigestion. That's why millions of Americans, night and day, at home or away, always carry Tums. There are many imitations, but there is no substitute for Tums. And now, back to A Date with Judy.
Well, we're home, Judy.
Oh, so we are. Good night, Oogie.
Gee, do I have to go home already?
Yes. I think it's best that you don't come in the house. Just shake my hand and say goodnight, Oogie.
Are you sure it's going to be all right for me to shake your hand? After all, I'm not Sinatra.
You're really terribly bitter and everything, aren't you, Oogie?
Well, jeepers. A man pays his good money to go to a movie, and what does he get? He doesn't even get to sit and talk to the girl for a while afterwards.
Oh, Oogie. I'm afraid I'm in no mood for mere talking.
There ought to be a law against a guy having this kind of effect on women. I wish I'd lived in the Middle Ages, that's what I wish, when there wasn't a hideous invention called moving pictures.
Oogie, dear.
Even the home isn't sacred. Now, while there are phonographs and records, it isn't. That man pervades even in the home, which is supposed to be the man who owns its castle.
But, Oogie, dear.
Well, all I've got to say, Miss Judy Foster, is, well, good night.
Oh, hiya. Home so early?
Yes.
Where's Oogie?
Gone home. And please don't remind me of plebeian mundane people like Oogie Pringle Randolph.
Why? What's wrong with him?
Nothing. I just don't want to have to think about him.
Oh, I get it. The Sinatra movie is having its effect. Well, can I help you upstairs, Judy?
No, I'm all right. I just want to sit here a while and think.
Well, when you finish thinking, you call upstairs and I'll come down and haul you up.
No, go to bed, Randolph. Don't worry about me.
Now, you remember what happened the last time you saw a Sinatra picture. You fell down a manhole.
Oh, Randolph, don't be silly. And please turn off the lights before you go.
But you might trip over a table or something.
I won't trip.
Okay, I'll turn it off. Well, good night, and be careful.
I will. Good night. Night and day, you are the one. Frankie.
Yes, Judy?
Come and sit beside me, Frankie.
Okay, I'll sit. Yeah, do you look snazzy?
Here we stand above the city looking out into the darkness. Come into my arms, darling, and let me hold you for a moment before we light the lamp.
Oh, Judy, you say the most beautiful things to me.
You say something beautiful to me, too, Frankie.
Okie dokie, how's this? We're alone, we two, all alone. How was that?
That was lovely, Frankie.
When you hear this one, this will wow you, hey.
Will it, Frankie?
Sure, listen. Holding you close, so close, is like holding a beautiful flower. One that I can only keep for a little while before you fade away. Like it?
It was fair.
Only fair?
Well, it was pretty good. But of course, there's a certain person who's much better, who represents a girl's true ideal love of perfection.
You mean I've got competition? There's some other man who's more of a girl's true ideal than I am?
Yes, Frankie, I'm afraid there is.
Who is this man? Name him.
Frankie, you're jealous.
You're darn right I'm jealous. Tell me who he is. I'll fight him with my bare fists.
Oh, Frankie, you're so strong that sometimes it frightens me.
Can I help it if I'm healthy?
I'm the sheik of Arabia. Judy. Oh, there you are. Oh, I see you have company.
Yes, Father. I have a date with Frankie Sinatra.
Hello, Frankie.
Hi, Mr. Foster.
Oh, gosh, Frankie, do you have to shake my hand like that? You nearly broke it in two. Boy, what a grip.
Sorry, Mr. Foster. I guess I don't know my own strength.
Well, you two going anyplace tonight?
Yes, we're going to see a marvelous movie. An Oogie Pringle movie.
Ah, jeepers, Judy. Do we have to go to see him?
Yes, he's wonderful.
What's so wonderful about him? He's just a thin Andy Russell.
Is that so? Well, you're just jealous.
Well, I don't want to see Oogie Pringle in the movies. I don't like Oogie Pringle. He's just a weakling, that's what he is.
He is not.
He is, too. Every time he sneezes, he blows himself clear across the room.
That isn't so. Oogie Pringle is wonderful. He's remote and unattainable and everything, but he's wonderful.
Who's Oogie Pringle?
Why, Father, the things you say.
You don't know who Oogie Pringle is, Father? Oh, Father, you haven't lived. Everybody who's alive has heard of Oogie Pringle.
I haven't.
Well, then you're dead, Father.
Why, Melvin, he's the swooner crooner.
Is that so? Oh, the guy who makes girls swoon. Yeah, isn't that awful? Making girls swoon. There ought to be a law against him.
But I like to swoon. The last time I saw one of his movies, I swooned 3 times.
Well, Frankie, instead of taking Judy to the Oogie Pringle movie, why don't you take her to the triple horror bill at the Bijou?
If you ask me, Oogie Pringle is a triple horror.
Oh, you're just jealous. You're really terribly bitter, aren't you, Frankie?
Well, what if I am? My whole life has been blighted because of inventions like phonographs and movie pictures. That's enough to blight anybody. Especially me.
Now, Frankie, I'm going to be very patient and try to explain to you what girls see in Oogie Pringle.
I don't want to see what girls see in Oogie Pringle.
You do, too. You just think you don't want to see it.
You know, when I was courting your mother, Judy, I used to be a pretty good swooner crooner myself.
Yes, Melvin, I distinctly remember you were wonderful. I used to moan every time you sang. In my day, we didn't squeal, Judy. We moaned.
Oh, but Mother, that's so old-fashioned. Nowadays, everybody who is anybody squeals.
I don't.
Oh, that's just because you're so strong. If you were only nice and skinny like Oogie Pringle.
Listen to this. Oh, won't you tell me when we will meet again? Sunday, Monday, and all week.
Oh, Melvin, that's delirious. Do you mind if I moan?
No, go ahead. Oh. Finished?
Yeah, all done.
That was peachy, Mr. Foster. It just gave me goosebumps.
Really, Father, it bears no resemblance whatsoever to Oogie Pringle singing.
Oogie Pringle, Oogie Pringle. That's all I ever hear about, just Oogie Pringle. You think he was the only man in existence.
Well, after all, who else is there?
Well, there's me.
Oh, Frankie, you're just a boy I happen to know, a good friend and all that. But, of course, you don't really send me like Oogie does.
Oh, Judy.
Oh, be quiet, everybody. The feature picture's coming on. Oogie Pringle's gonna sing. Shh, everybody.
Hi-ho, everybody. This is Oogie Pringle singing to you from the silver screen. Aren't I wonderful? Aren't I just adorable?
Oh, yes, Oogie.
Quiet, Judy. He isn't talking to you.
I know. He's just so remote and unattainable and everything.
I'm not a wolf, I'm never flip, I do not flirt. I'm not the least she-she. I'm not a wolf, I'm just a drip, a little squirt. But there's a beast in me. I had a date with Judy, a big date with Judy, jeepers and jeeps. I've got a date with Judy, and Judy's got one with me. My heart is shooting rockets. There's dough in my pockets. I'm high as a kite. I've got a date with Judy, and Judy's booked for tonight. My manly lure, my wild amour, I'm holding in reserve. I cannot wait to osculate, but will I have the nerve? I've got a date with Judy. I've snagged one with Judy. Oh, jeepers and gee. I've got a date with Judy, and Judy's got one with me.
You see, Frankie, you could never sing like that.
Yeah, I know. Aren't I lucky?
Oh, Frankie.
After all, I can sing, too.
Oh, I know, but...
And don't forget, I'm the orchestra leader of Frankie Sinatra's high school pepper pots, I am.
Yes, I know.
And I'm mighty proud of those pots.
Well, you're all right, Frankie. But the trouble with you is, you're so attainable.
Well, wouldn't you give me just the chance to sing to you? Just one little tiny chance?
Well, maybe.
Please, Judy.
Oh, all right, if you insist.
Oh, thank you, Judy.
I'll just lie down here languorously on the divan and listen to you.
See, I hope you like it.
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, but I do. I don't know why you thrill me like you do. I don't know why, but you do. You never seem to want my romance. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, but I do. You never seem to want my romance. The only time you hold me is when I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, but I do.
How was it, Judy? What do you think?
Oh, it was very nice.
Oh, but you didn't squeal, Judy.
I know. I just wasn't in the very Bobby Sox mood.
Well, gee whiz, I didn't expect you to swoon, but the least you could have done was squeal.
I will some other time, Frankie.
Judy, where are you going?
I'm sorry, I have to go now. I want to look at a fan magazine. It's got Oogie Pringle's picture in it.
Don't go, Judy. Judy, don't go, please. Come back, come back. Judy, Judy.
Judy, Judy.
What? Yes, Father.
For the love of heaven, have you been sleeping down here on the divan all night?
What?
I said, have you been sleeping down here all night? What's the matter with you? Have you been dreaming?
I've been dreaming. Oh. Oh, Father, please go away. I want to go back to sleep.
I will not go away. It's 7:30, and it's time for you to get up and go to school.
School? Oh, Father.
Well, now, who's that at 7:30 in the morning?
Shall I go?
No, never mind. I'll open the door.
Hey, Mr. Foster.
Why, Oogie Pringle.
Hello, Judy.
Hello, Oogie.
Gee, excuse me for coming over so early in the morning, but... Oh, gee, Judy, I want to apologize for the way I acted last night.
How did you act?
Oh, awful. I had a fight with Judy and walked off, leaving her on the front porch.
Oh, that's all right, Oogie. I didn't mind a bit.
You didn't?
No, Oogie, I wouldn't care what you did. Anything you do is all right with me.
It is. Jeepers.
Oh, Oogie, I think you're wonderful.
What hit her?
I don't know. Are you feeling all right, Judy?
Of course I am. Well, Oogie, I want you to know that you're absolutely right. The movies and the phonograph are just wonderful, of course. But for goodness sakes, why should a girl keep on dreaming when there's somebody so marvelous and attainable as you around?
Oh, Judy, I don't know how I... Boy, are you snazzy.
Judy will be back in a moment. Meanwhile, when happy users of Tums for the Tummy tell you they taste like fine candy mints, that's only the half of it. Only a dime a roll, any drugstore. A single roll will convince you. Ask for Tums, T-U-M-S, Tums for the Tummy. And now here's Judy again.
Hello? Oh, I'm sorry, but I have to go to bed early. It's no fun. Yes, it is, if you dream about Frank Sinatra.
Frank Sinatra may be heard on his own radio show sponsored by Max Factor Hollywood. A Date with Judy is written by Aline Leslie. Remember, night and day, at home or away, always carry Tums. T-U-M-S. Tonight's State with Judy will be transmitted to our men and women overseas by shortwave and through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Three coins in the fountain, each one seeking happiness, thrown by three hopeful lovers, which one will the fountain bless? Three hearts in the fountain, each heart longing for its home. There they lie in the fountain, somewhere in the heart of Rome. Which one will the fountain bless? Which one fountain bless? Three coins in the fountain, through the ripples how they shine. Just one wish will be granted, one heart will wear a valentine. Make it mine, make it mine, make it mine. Coins in the fountain, through the ripples how they shine. And just one wish will be granted, one heart will wear a valentine. Make it mine, make it mine, make it mine.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and Frank Sinatra with Three Coins in the Fountain from 1954. We also heard an episode of A Date with Judy starring Ann Gillis as Judy Foster. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s. When the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, comedy with the Lou Holtz Laugh Club, but right now, there's a poisoner at large on Dr. Tim Detective as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
This is Dr. Tim Detective to bring you by transcription the mystery of the poisoner at large. It isn't very often these days that you run across a case of wholesale poisoning. But when you do, well, there's never a dull moment until you've tracked the whole thing down. There's nothing worse than to be poisoned, whether you take the wrong medicine out of your medicine cabinet by mistake, or whether it's fed to you by somebody else, as it was in this particular case which came to my attention not so long ago. But I'd better start right at the beginning. Sandy and Jill, they're a couple of my very best friends and helpers, were watching me at work in my laboratory this particular evening. And, as usual, the questions flew thick and fast.
Sure, I get the general idea, but what's that machine for?
It sure makes enough racket.
Well, as I was saying, it's called a centrifuge.
That explains everything, I guess.
Yeah, I can see it just about as easy as a black sheep in a coal mine. At night.
Okay, kids, I'll back up a little. You see, when you have several kinds of bacteria, or bugs, I guess you'd call them, or when you want to separate one part of a substance from another, you put them in a centrifuge, turn on the switch, and the machine whirls them around at a few thousand revolutions per minute.
Then what happens?
Presto, like this. The centrifuge separates the lighter from the heavier parts. In this case, the bacteria I'm hoping to find from the solution they grew in. And, well, here you are. Look for yourselves.
Hey, it worked.
I'll be darned.
Now, transfer these bacteria to a culture.
Here we go again.
Well, a culture is merely something for the bacteria to grow in and feed from.
Oh.
In this case, I'm going to use the fertilized egg of a chicken. And if the experiment works, I'll soon know if these bacteria can live and grow in living tissue. At other times, the culture might be milk or a sugar solution. Or even a bit of custard pie. It's a way we scientific detectives have of finding out a lot of things.
I don't see much detective work there.
Yeah, you'd be surprised, Sandy. You'd be surprised. Hello.
Hello, Tim. Is that you?
Oh, hello, Jarvis. How are things down at the health department?
Well, we could sure use you right now if you've got the time. We're pretty short-handed, and something's come up I don't like at all. Right in your neighborhood.
Well, anything serious?
14 calls during the last hour, and all from your part of town. Food poisoning, I think.
Any clues?
Not yet. Haven't had time to check thoroughly. Thought you might help there. Like to get out your set of false mustaches and do a little detective work?
Why, Dr. Jarvis, you know us junior G-men have given up disguises. The latest thing is to graft noses on us like a bloodhound.
All right, any way you please.
A few minutes later, Sandy, Jill, and I were mapping out our campaign. Now, some people think it's kind of funny for a combination doctor and detective to count on a couple of kids for help on a case. But let me tell you that those two are just about the most valuable assistants I have. In between phone calls reporting new cases of food poisoning, we outlined the problem and our work.
So you mean you'd like us to get a complete list of everything the sick people ate today?
Exactly. And then by putting those lists together, we ought to find that all of them had one kind of food somewhere along the line, or ate at the same restaurant, perhaps. In other words, you see, we need a common factor to start with.
I get it. You're trying to track down where the food poisoning came from.
Exactly. And that way, we can stop anyone else from eating the contaminated food.
But gee, what is it? Arsenic or rat poison or something?
Well, that's what I'm going to find out by a careful laboratory analysis after I visit a couple of those sick people. However, I'm willing to bet that we'll find our old friends, the bacteria, at the bottom of it.
Germs, huh?
Yes. Well, let's get going, kids. By the time I arrived home, after looking in on some of the patients, I had enough laboratory material to keep me busy for quite a spell. Samples of food from several homes, minute bits of waste from the patients, and lists similar to those Sandy and Jill were compiling. I went into my laboratory and sat down for a few moments to think. So far, nothing about the case made sense. Except that all those people did have food poisoning. I thought about that. And some of them were mighty sick indeed. There'd be a lot more if we didn't track down the source of the trouble in a hurry. Stop anyone else from eating the germ-laden food. And as I adjusted my microscope for the umpteenth time, I found what I was looking for. I motioned the others over. Well, here's the criminal.
Feel anything?
Yeah, me too.
They all peered into the microscope. Dr. Jarvis was the first to speak.
Nasty little germ, salmonella.
What salmonella?
I suppose it accounts for more food poisoning than all the other bacteria put together. It doesn't kill very many people. It sure makes a lot of them plenty sick.
Did you find out where it came from?
Unfortunately, no. There aren't any samples of the food I've tested so far that show its presence. The bacteria you see under the microscope are from the stomach contents of one of the patients.
Just plain doesn't make sense.
It looks like a dead end from here.
Well, let's do the best we can. Let's find the, say, the three items that appear oftenest in the list you've made. And just might be a connection. First, though, I think we can rule out canned food, as there hasn't been any real trouble with commercially canned food for years. And it's impossible that all those people ate the same home canned stuff that might have gone bad. This is going to be tougher than I thought. The results of our detective work were peculiar, to say the least. But we did prove one thing. There were three food items to be suspected, because one of those three appeared in all the diets of the ones who ate at home. With a flourish of his pencil, Dr. Jarvis summed it up.
Well, here we are. Those poisoned people had either hamburger in some form, cream pie, or chocolate eclairs. Doesn't make sense.
Wait a minute, I've got an idea. I've been working on the ones who ate out, and all of them had one of those three.
Hold on a minute.
Wait till you hear this one. I've been doing the stores and the restaurants. Everybody that ate out went to the drugstore down on the corner.
This is beginning to add up to something.
Let me see your list, Joe. No, the other one. All the pastry, the cream pies, and the chocolate eclairs came from one bakery.
Well, sure, and we have meatloaf, hamburgers, meatballs, and tamale pie, all made with ground meat from the same butcher shop.
You're sure of that?
Uh-huh.
Now all we have to do is to chase all over town to those various stores, trying to find out what and why.
Gosh, no, you don't.
Don't what?
Don't have to chase all over town, or even this end of it. That bakery and the meat market and the drugstore where the people ate are all right together. Just four blocks down the street.
Say, wait a minute. If that's true, Jarvis, I think we might have the answer. Let's get going. Fast.
Come on, let's go. Come on.
As we drove the short distance to the shopping center, I got to thinking. You know, it's a funny thing about mysteries, especially complicated ones like this one, where people scattered over a wide area all come down with the same illness at once. At first, things don't even make sense. Look impossible, you might say. And then, with a bit of information added here and there, a dim pattern begins to take shape. Well, that's exactly what happened in the poison mystery this time. Here's what we knew. Three food items caused those people to become deathly ill. Well, two, really, because it occurred to me that the filling of cream pie and the filling of chocolate eclairs is the same. And the other was hamburger. Both items came from the same two stores. Those who had eaten at the drugstore had eaten either hamburger or the cream filling. What would be more logical than for the drugstore food to be purchased at the butcher shop next door and the bakery two doors down? So the pattern was now clear. Only one part of the mystery remained. How could both the pastry and the hamburger become poisoned with the germs of salmonella? And as we drove up in front of the stores and parked, an almost forgotten item of my medical training popped into my mind. I was sure I had the answer. Well, as we gathered in my laboratory a little later, Sandy, Jill, Dr. Jarvis, and myself, we were a happy gang. There wouldn't be any more cases of food poisoning from that source, at least. Lost in thought, I heard Sandy ask,
"But gee, Dr. Tim, how come you went right into those stores and started looking for rats?"
"You sure fooled me."
"Well, as Dr. Jarvis could tell you as well as I, one of the commonest carriers of salmonella, the food poisoning bug, is rats and mice. A few of their droppings around a food store and
Well, you've seen what happens.
Well, that's why we have inspections by the city and campaigns against rats and mice, even if you can't get results 100% of the time.
But why would just the, well, the cream filling in the hamburger be full of germs?
Well, you remember what I told you about cultures, the perfect material for bacteria to grow on?
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, two of the best cultures in the world for salmonella are cream fillings and ground meat, especially in a warm place like the bakery, or when left outside the refrigerator in a butcher shop. It's the perfect setup for an epidemic like ours.
But why did those stores being right together give you the idea?
Elementary, my dear Sandy, elementary. It would be rather strange that two or three different sets of food poisoning would break out on the same day at widely separated spots. So figuring that adjoining buildings would offer plenty of opportunity for the same carriers to go back and forth freely, I apprehended the poisoners at large. It's a matter of get rid of the rats, get rid of the poisoners. And believe me, that's going to be done. This is Dr. Tim Detective, saying so long until next week at this same time, when Sandy, Jill, and I will bring you the exciting transcribed story I call The Mystery of the House That Jack Built.
The Lou Holtz Laugh Club, presided over by America's favorite storyteller, who says,
"Friends, believe me, marriage is like a lottery, except for one thing. When you draw a blank in a lottery, you can tear it up and take another chance."
Now, here he is, chairman of the Laugh Club, Lou Holtz.
Well, thank you, thank you. The meeting of the Laugh Club will now come to order. And Miss Ginger, if you'll read the minutes...
Oh, please, Mr. Holtz, I'd rather not. I've been shopping all day, and I feel kind of woozy.
Well, what's wrong, Ginger? Haven't you had anything to eat?
Oh, yes, I ate in the department store. I had a chocolate fudge sundae on white bread.
Ginger... You had a chocolate fudge sundae on white bread? Well, no wonder you don't feel good.
You're right, Mr. Holtz. I should have had it on whole wheat.
Well, never mind, never mind. What were you shopping for?
I was buying little old Jack Jethro a birthday gift.
Oh, that's nice. That's real nice. And what did you get him?
A pair of men's pajamas. And were they expensive? $52.50 a pair.
Well, that's not too expensive for a pair of really fine pajamas. What did you expect?
Listen, Mr. Holtz, for $52.50, they should have had a man in them.
Which, for no good reason at all, reminds me of a story about an Englishman. There was an Englishman in England. Of course, he'd have to be in England. And he's on the racetrack. He's on the racetrack, and there's a four-horse race. And he goes over to a man on the turf there who accepts all the wages. You know, they don't have the machines in England. And it's a four-horse race. He says, "See here, old fellow, what price is number two?" And the bookmaker said, "Number two is 15-1. He says, "I'll bet you £1,000. He says, £1,000 on number two. "Thank you. You have a wager. You have a wager." And he starts to walk away, and the bookmaker says, "Ho, ho, ho. What a silly fool. Betting on number two hasn't an earthly chance, hasn't an earthly." So the Englishman, he hears him laughing, and he comes over. He says, "Why are you laughing?" He says, "Why so jovial?" "Well," he says, "you've made a wager on number two. He shan't win. He shan't win, and he can't win." He says, "Why?" He says, "He's my horse. I own him. He belongs to me. He won't win." The Englishman looked at him. He says, "Is that so?" He says, "Well, I'd like to inform you of something." He says, "I own the other three horses, and this is going to be an awfully slow race."
Mr. Holtz, I'm going out with Jack Jessup tonight.
See, you know, Ginger, I can't understand what you see in all these handsome boys. Listen, I'd like to ask you something. Which kind of a boy do you really prefer? A pretty boy without brains or a homely man with great intelligence?
Well, honestly, sugar, I prefer you to either one of them.
I love that girl. Meeting's adjourned.
you want to hear some boogie, then I know the place. Just an old piano and a knocked-out bass. The drummer man's a guy they call 8-Beat Joe. You remember Doc and old Beatin' Me Daddy. Mo Man is better than chicken fried, not old bacon grease. Come along with me, boy, down the road of peace. There's a place you really get your kicks. It's open every night from about 12 to 6. If you want to do some boogie, then you'll get your fill. They put the 8-beat to you like an old steam drill. Come along with me, boy, for the loser leases. Down the road, down the road, down the road a piece. Road, down the road, down the road a piece. Road, down the road, down the road a piece.
The Golden Age of Radio on WMKY and Merrill Moore with Down the Road a Piece from 1955. We also heard the Lou Holtz Laugh Club in an episode of Dr. Tim Detective. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel. On WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.